Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm your co-host, Grant Spanier.
And I'm your other co-host, Vince Cochi.
And today is episode 12 of 10,000 Hours, and we're having a bit of a hostful. It's just your host, no guest. That's I don't know percentage wise. What is that? 100, like twice the host,
Vince? 200% of your normal hostful intake.
2,000% host here, and it's a topic that is near and dear to my heart, the creative trifecta. And Vince, what is it?
Yeah, it's a concept that, Grant, you introduced to me recently, and I thought was amazing, and I insisted we have a show about it, and, I mean, you pitched it to me as a possible show topic, and I was like, yes, has to happen. Basically, the three points... the three sort of personality points or proficiency points that make up every creative professional's, and really any person's, skill set.
Human. Look at that. Universal, man. That's so universal.
It's a bit universal.
So, that's it? That's all we got? Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, basically, yeah. That's the overarching view of it. What do you want me to say, dude? We had...
I want you to say... Vince, okay, fine. Here's what I want you to say, Vince. I want you to say that we're talking about the creative trifecta.
Yep.
And this is a framework that you can apply to your life and your work. And it's a way for you to understand your own skill set and how that applies to the greater landscape of your organization or of your profession, and maybe make some adjustments that can help you stand out or just do better in your field.
See, dude, you see
what
I did?
That's what I want you to say, Vince.
You see what I did?
Oh, you inspired me.
I sandbagged so your rage would carry you to the greatest topic introduction of all time.
Wow,
I'm the
Vince,
sensei.
You are a great American hero. You are incredible. I bow down to you.
All right, it's getting a little too sarcastic. No, but that was a great description. That's exactly what we were talking about.
I keep it pretty sarcastic in general. And speaking of great American heroes, we've undergone a bit of a recession in the print industry lately. I don't know if you noticed that, Vince.
I think so.
A lot of things have been going digital. Did you see that trend?
I've noticed the trend.
So on episode 11, we were talking about bucking that trend and zagging while others zigged. And this show's sponsor is an organization, full disclosure, I'm a part of, which is Green Room Magazine. We're print and we're also online, but primarily we're a quarterly print piece. And we operate at the intersection of culture, wellness, and art. And... We've been just plugging away. We kickstarted the magazine in September, and we've put out two issues so far. We're very excited about the content that we're making, the artists we're talking to, the design and the aesthetic, which is something I'm very responsible for with some very talented people. And I just want to thank Green Room for supporting our art and also for including our art, which is 10,000 Hours, in the last print issue of the magazine, in which we showcase some of the work of Adam Garcia from episode 5, was it, Vince? It was. And,
nailed it, number 5.
yeah. And I would recommend all of our listeners just go check it out. It's such a cheap investment for a cool print artifact. I think it's like 30 or 35 bucks a year for quarterly, and then you get access to all the other stuff. Just go to greenroommagazine.com to subscribe. But actually, Vince, let me just throw this out there, okay?
I'm going to do
a little bit of a test.
I'm going to catch it.
I want to see who's listening, and I'm actually just going to straight up, out of pocket, offer a free Green Room, last issue, issue 2, to anybody who just emails me. Okay.
Oh.
Send me an email to Send me an email to Grant Spanier, GrantSpanier. Rewind it if you didn't quite get it there. And GrantSpanier@gmail.com. Send me an email, ideally with the subject line of like Green Room or 10,000 Hours or whatever, and just tell me that you want issue 2. Send me your address, and I'll out of pocket postage and the magazine. I'll send it to you, because here's the thing: I want anybody who's listening to this, they give a shit about doing stuff and about making stuff, and I really just want to get this magazine in their hands. because it's sort of like the equivalent of like when you really believe in a product, you just want people to use it. And I fucking really believe in this thing, man. I bled on the pages of this thing, and so even if I have to go out of pocket to give it to people, I want to put it in their hands, and hopefully they'll find value in it and subscribe and get the next one. So dude, send me an email and I'll send you the magazine.
If you hear it and don't take advantage of that generous offer, you're crazy because that's just, I mean, It's an awesome product, and I've been able to see and hear your work on it sort of secondhand, and I mean, it's just awesome. And so you got to check it out.
Thanks, man. So enjoy episode 12, and today we're talking about the creative trifecta, which is hopefully a few of the lenses for which you can view your own skill set, your own work, and hopefully apply that to ideally building your skills and kind of separating yourself from the pack, whatever pack you might be running with. Episode 12, Creative Trifecta, Bazinga.
Enjoy. All right there, buddy.
I'm okay. It's just a pre-podcast ritual. You know how it goes. I'm very superstitious. So I guess we don't need to talk about it being a hostful in this part, do we? Probably just intro.
We'll say it. We'll like mention it quick at some point, I'm sure.
Maybe we'll just leave that part in where we're just talking like a couple seconds ago about it being a hostful and about whether or not we should mention it.
I mean, no, probably not.
All right, man. I'm the one who's going to edit this, so I feel like now you really shot yourself in the foot there. Okay, so Monsieur Vincent, Mr. Vince, what are you putting your time into right now? I want to know what you're working on. I want to hear about your life. I want you to tell me all your deep personal thoughts and secrets and
Let's throw the brakes on, man. Let's just like
Let's ease into the brakes. I don't want to. This is a pretty.
Let's not get into
still.
Life secrets, my deepest, darkest fears. But I will gladly share what I've been working on this last week. Busy at the office. We have an awesome client. It's a consumer electronics client. Makes portable satellite dishes. Very fun to work with. And these guys need a new message identity system. And so that's basically how you talk about your products, how you talk to each other about your products internally, and how you talk about it externally. A lot of fun because you get to kind of build a mythos and a conversational tone for a brand from the ground up. And we're working with some great people over there. So it's a really good time, but it is a lot of work because you need to do your research and you need to do it right. You can't just kind of spitball it. Because it's going to be an important document in the end. So
yeah, well, those guys know their product, right? They know their stuff. And so if you display less knowledge than them about their thing, you look like an idiot. No wonder why they hired you. And to be
absolutely fair, why are they paying you?
You should check out Todd Henry. He does some really good stuff. He had a book called The Accidental Creative, and has another great book called Die Empty, which quite the title, right? But it's about like leaving it all out there. No, just die empty, like leave all of your good work on the table. It's kind of like leave it all in the out on the field, right? Give 110%.
Let it all hang out, essentially.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's just like a powerful thought to just, you know what? Like don't leave anything
left. It's an intense notion for sure.
Yeah, it's not so much like, hey, you need to kill yourself for your work and whatever. No, it's just like, you know, do it.
Like don't leave anything in the tank.
Yeah, totally. It's cool.
Can't take it with you,
buddy. But he talks a lot about myth building. Which is kind of a Seth Godin thought too, which is building the myth, building the story, not in like a deceptive way or in like a weird Greek Roman.
It's just
mythology.
Weaving the tapestry. Cool, man. I will be interested to check it out, and I'll be interested in show notes it.
Nice. Note to self. Note to us. Note to show.
Hey, man. What have you been working on this week?
I thought you'd never ask. Thank you so much, Vince. I've been, so as you know, I've been moving, you know, I removed, which was a thing. I've been recovering from surgery, which was and is a thing.
Lots of stuff.
So I've been in sort of a extended liminal phase, this like transitional period in a lot of ways in my business, in as a studio, in the type of work I'm doing, my health, my physical location. And man, I've just had a lot, really a lot going on the last about 8 weeks, I would say. And it's all kind of just like, boom, you know. So we're going to be releasing this cast pretty close to record date. So it's just May just kind of turned. It's just became May, which is exciting. And I feel like I'm finally like, I mean, literally, I have my both feet on the ground again. I got cleared the walk a couple of days ago. And that's just like totally changed my demeanor. I mean, going around on crutches for 6 weeks really opened my eyes up to a lot of stuff, like especially about the way we treat people with disabilities and like, I don't know, man, I'm sort of like, whoa, you know, really eye opened about that. So that being said, within all of this sort of introspective thinking and contemplation, and I've had a lot of time to do that, I'm now kind of setting myself up, I think. I'm trying to build for the future and put in time on things that are not necessarily going to pay dividends right away, which is really hard, especially for someone who's all about shipping and for, you know, just like the nature of my business and of the work we're doing even, you know. And so a lot of that has to do with, you know, one, I'm redesigning my site and trying to not future-proof it, but make a really cool, interesting property where, you know, my thoughts can live. I can have a small shop for some of the things I've been making, you know, poster-wise and product-wise, and display my work and tell my story. I would say those are the goals of that. Because, I mean,
it just has to do it all. That's all.
Yeah. It's my new business funnel. It's like the way people kind of get to know me.
Absolutely.
And so I want to tell that story and do it right. And I've been working with some guys over at Von 91, a little shout out to those fellas. Just really preliminary stages of design and development there, but really cool guys who just want to make cool stuff, which gets me so pumped up. So there's been awesome. That. And part of that has been me writing a lot, more than usual. And the irony there is I've been publishing way less because I'm being a little bit more intentional about the frequency and the content and trying to put it into more of a bucket and kind of own some thoughts, you know, because I do a lot of thinking and a lot of writing, but just trying to package that up a little bit. So, sorry, that was a big whew, but that's what I've been working on. And
it sounds like you have got a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm jamming, man. I'm excited. I'm really excited.
ABJ, always be jamming?
ABJ, I like that TM. Throw a TM on there.
We did.
Hey, go to Amazon and go check out the new ebook from Grant and Vince called ABJ. Always be jamming. The do's, don'ts, and never dids of making stuff happen.
Of jamming and jam life.
Jam life. Hashtag jam life. Yeah. So I've been working on that. And one of those posts, dear Vince, is called the Creative Trifecta.
What is the Creative Trifecta, Grant?
So the Creative Trifecta to me, it's something I've thought about actually a lot, but I've just started to put words to, or at least more concrete or more like formally structured words, you know, in the recent past. It's something I've been thinking about for the past few years, though. It's the elements of who we are, especially creatively and career-wise. You know, what makes up a person's identity as a worker, per se? You know, because I was somebody who bounced around, you know, I pretty early on knew what I wanted to do in terms of, you know, first I wanted to be a writer, and then it was like, oh, advertising, this is really cool. And then it was just really bouncing around a lot of that, you know, startups and what are the different roles there? Who does what? You know, what makes up this person? What kind of person is a strategist? What kind of person is a designer, et cetera? And this is really a boiled down version of what I see as the elements. And I think that a lot of the roles we think about, whether that is a designer or a writer or a creative director or a project manager, a producer, an account, whatever, they contain different elements of these, you know, especially creatives, I think. And the amount you contain of each element sort of is a good indicator of what kind of position you should have. You know, I'm all about these fluid positions and you know, I'm not about concrete you know,
no
that.
Rigid definitions. Yeah, we're on the same page
still,
for that. For
but
sure,
still. Man. And so, I think just to start off, the three elements to me are technical skill, problem-solving ability or problem-solving approach, and then style or aesthetic. Those are the three buckets.
Yes. So that was a great description, great breakdown. Just to backtrack for a quick second. So this episode is going to be a hostful. If you haven't already figured out, you are sharing an hour with me and Grant, and we're happy to have you.
They asked for it. You know, we're just responding to the people.
The people have spoken, and they want more of us.
Wow.
That was horrible.
That's bad. Can we cut that out? No, we got to leave it.
Now we have to because you addressed it.
Can we cut me out talking about cutting it out?
The whole episode, we're going to cut the whole episode. But you set it up really nicely. The creative trifecta, I was just recently introduced to this concept myself, coined by you, Grant, and I'm already a big subscriber. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's already lended some clarity to the way I think about different people's skill sets, and I think it's going to be a pretty cool topic for today's show.
Jeez, man, I hope.
Well, here goes nothing.
Yeah. So how do we dive in?
Let's break them down one by one, really quick.
Sure.
Let's start with technical skill. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is like the mechanics, the fungible know-how, and the physical ability to produce things.
Yeah, I love that word, by the way, Vince. Fungible, okay. Which is the 10,000 hours word of the day.
DM.
yeah. And we should start doing contests. By the way, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know what. Let me think about that. Okay, I'm gonna ruminate on that. Second word of the day. We should do five words of the day. Every 10 minutes, let's whip it out. Okay, so technical skill. Yes, it is the person who can look at a concrete set of step-by-step list of things and execute on those things. You know, whether that's audio editing or video editing or production design. It's knowing specs, knowing technical jargon, whatever, and just kind of producing. You are, let's say in the design world, I would call this person a production designer. Somebody who
yes.
has taken the art direction, taken the, you know, the preliminary designs, and is just really tightening it up and getting it up to par for the technical specs.
Yeah, basically they have the physical ability that some others might not have to actually put the hammer to the iron.
Yeah.
You
basically
product.
Just, you know the tools. You know
yes.
the tools. If I was going to put this in, I would say like if we're going to talk about it just through a design context, which is I think an easy way to do it, this is like the 99 designs people. Somebody who's on 99 designs, you submit a logo thing and they can technically produce a logo.
Yes.
It might be sort of shit without some of the other elements of
perhaps.
The trifecta. But, you know, you're going to get a technically proficient logo.
Yes. Some of the skill sets to look out for in the technical skills category, that's like attention to detail.
Yeah.
You got some more for me? That's the one, that's the one that stands out.
Desire to work for low wages.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm just kidding. No, here's the thing. Actually, out of all of these, most times I would say the technical skill person demands the most respect in my eyes. They don't demand it, but they should be their most respected because they put in the time to perhaps not develop their craft per se, but develop their technical proficiency with whether it's software or hardware or whatever. So they're a person with a deep knowledge of the tools of the trade.
Bang.
Yes.
Number two. Problem-solving acumen, or ability, or approach.
Well, acumen's a great word. I say we go with acumen.
I mean, but they all mean the same thing, right? It's
yeah.
your ability to think critically about a situation and come to a conclusion.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, some of the hot points there are, in general, when I think about just a pure problem-solving person who let's just say 100%, no one's 100% any of these skill sets or any of these any of the trifecta, but heavily weighted there would be somebody in the advertising world, be a strategist, it'd be a planner, someone who understands or who seeks to understand the world and seeks to understand people and is able to sort of intersect in that and able to break that down and just sort of look at a problem and think about ways to solve that. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, which is a lot of what designers do. I think really good designers do, but yeah, let's call them a strategist.
Cool. Yes, absolutely. These are more the high level thinkers.
Yeah.
Of the trifecta, I would say.
Yeah, they're sort of holistic. They're not super focused, honestly, on execution, which is where our technical person is going to come in. But they are thinking about, you know, how does this intersect in people's lives, or how does this matter in culture, or you know, what is the current state of affairs? So it's somebody who's really up on stuff, whether that's politically or socially or whatever.
Awesome. Yes, that is the second point of the trifecta, and the third would be what you call aesthetic, or what was the word?
It's
you
your
used?
Style, man. It's your swagger.
Style. Your taste.
Yeah, taste.
Things that you like.
Taste, which is incredibly hard to teach. Well, or incredibly rare, I would say. You know, that's where I see a lot of technically proficient people fall off. Is they just don't have taste. And honestly, I'm not knocking. I'm just being very realistic about the different variations among people. And
yeah, I think it's important to note in the discussion that there's no like this is like the good one to have, and these are like the less important ones. And it's also not like if you have this and not this, like you're bad for these reasons. People fall, creative people who do creativity in their jobs for a living. I mean, because it's my opinion that everyone's creative, right?
Yeah. But
we're talking about creative professionals. Fall into these three categories in different amounts all the time, and that's totally good. We need all three of them to have a balance. So when you say, like, a lot of people have good technical proficiency, but they lack in style, that's not really a criticism. It's just addressing what you think is the situation.
Well, too, honestly, I think these this framework can apply across professions too. You know, we just see less variation in some more concrete things. Like, for example, let's think about Olympic gymnastics. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's something where we like. Really what we're looking at is like heavily weighted in technical proficiency, you know, somebody just who can execute the moves, who understand, you know, this is a numbers data driven thing, but there are these little like je ne sais quoi moments and je ne sais quoi people, you know what I mean? This little like indescribable thing, but really it's like this stylistic flair. And it's like the kind of the swagger I say of athletes, you know, just that style. It's just, man, they got that little extra something.
And the X factor is oftentimes
it's the X factor.
Just taste or style masquerading as something undefinable.
But so then think about sports, right? I see somebody who's, let's call like, I think a lot of this, I mean, a lot of the people I really respect have an intense grounding in the technical side. You know what I mean? They just sort of check that box. It doesn't mean they always do it, but they check that box and they know how to communicate that. They know what goes into it. And then where the true like, oh man, I was about to sound like a douchebag and say rock stars. But no, I think we're like the standout, like, whoa, X Factor style people really make their ground is in the style category or in the solving strategy or the solving category, which is really strategy, right? Think about somebody like Bill Belichick. Who just like he understands this game, the game on such a deep level, and you know, listen. Besides, like maybe cheating a little bit, right? But you know, when he was looking at the opponent's play calls, right?
Right.
With their whatever. But let me just say, like the fact that he was even doing that is a signal amidst all this noise that he is like deeply, intensely thinking about the strategy of the game. It's sort of a Moneyball sort of thing, you know. Billy Beane is coming in. Well, I mean, especially with Jonah Hill. No, but he's coming in with you know what I'm talking about, Moneyball, right? He's coming in with a deep like strategy play there, and they've got some style, but mostly it's just a strategy play. I mean, and they've already checked the box of technical execution.
Right, and the reason why you see this happening, like technical execution, the box is always checked for these standouts in strategy and style, is because if you don't have that box checked, even if you're a great strategist and great and have great taste, you never emerge out of the throngs of people because no one can ever see the product of your innovations.
Well, execution is everything, right?
Bingo. I mean, that's what we talk about week in and week out.
Week in, week out. And let me just say, you know, a lot of this is something I struggle with because artists are my people. They are my people, Vince. They're my tribe. But a lot of artists really suck at the business side of things, which, let's just say in the context of artistry, that is part of the technical side is commerce. And partly strategy. It kind of lives in between tech and strategy or solving there. And it just breaks my heart. But hey, real talk, like if you're not able to figure out the commerce side, like that, you're fucked. I mean, it's just the reality of the thing. I think really, you know what? I mean, art is something that is it's amazing and it's like subjective and it's weird and it's cool and it's like cathartic and whatever. But if you truly consider yourself a professional artist, you know, I think it's really easy to get caught up in this whole like, oh, you know, I'm a pure artist. I'm against materialism and consumerism and money and whatever. But, you know, kind of fuck you. Like, that's fine if you can do that. No, more power to you. But right. If you're trying to live within the confines of or like, you know, that almost like sounds like horrible. Like if you're trying to live within the confines of our society. No, but if you're trying to like make money and make a living out of this thing, like you need to be able to execute on that side of things.
There are boundaries to play with, and this is one of those boundaries. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess why I think this is important.
Yeah, to summarize. So we hit on the three different points, and the reason it's important to talk about is because?
Well, for a few reasons. I think, you know, one thing we talk about a lot, and it's, you know, we're going to beat it into the ground and strangle it, but yeah. It's the idea of starting something and figuring out, sort of a framework or a way to go, or, you know, like, I like these things, I don't know what to do, I know I want to do stuff, I'm, like, passionate, I think, but I'm not sure, you know, this is a good matrix, I think, you know, draw three circles. Write technical strategy and style in them, and just start to think about which one you lean into most. You know, am I kind of like a 20% technical guy, a 40% style guy, and a 40% solving guy? You know, maybe then at that intersection of those three things, maybe you know there you're like you're a designer. You're just a designer, or not just. I mean, you're a designer. you know, maybe if you weigh more heavily, like you know, you're an 80% solving guy. 10% style guy, 10% tech guy or woman, maybe you're a strategist or, right. Or maybe within your career path, let's say you're a banker, you're in the banking industry. Maybe you're, I don't know, whatever, but it's just a good way to like think about it, you know, sort of promoting that whole self-awareness trip.
You know, just, it's a tool which you can examine yourself and through that you gain some, I think, valuable insight about the better ways you can approach starting projects and the better projects that you can start working on.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the stuff we're talking about is for people and, you know, for ourselves, working in teams, working in organizations. And for me, when I think about, what, you know, where I try and live within this, and I'd be really curious to hear where you do, Ben, but, you know, I'm really trying to be right in the middle of that. I really want to, like, have a kind of a deep skill in each one of these because here let me say a couple things about this. You know, having a technical skill is like having a diploma because what it means is you have freedom. You have a key to the world because you're independent. You can be, you know, you can make your own thing. You can produce your own thing, which is where a lot of people fall off.
you can always fall back on the fact that you can make this thing with this skill.
Right. I mean, that's why people get degrees in certain things, you know? Right. Oh, well, yeah. I'm certified. I'm a CPA. Okay, well, great. You can do taxes or you can do accounting, whatever. Great. So that's what technical skill grants you. It's a ticket to the game, really. And to me, somebody who puts in the time, energy, and has the tenacity to follow through on a technical skill set, fuck yeah. Like, I want you on my team. Okay.
So watch now on my team.
Yeah. I want to hang out with you. I want to be friends. Like, we should go to a show. We should go to dinner.
So Grant, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think everyone should strive to land right in the middle of this triangle and to cultivate
what a loaded question.
Skill
what
in
a
all
loaded question.
All 3 points?
Absolutely not, Vince. I mean,
right.
Besides the vocation inequality and kind of madness we're going to see, especially like promoted by a lot of the self-help and follow your heart Tumblr style.
that is ideology. Another show topic.
Yeah, it totally is. But that stuff, like, you know, the subtext to all this is like, oh, you know, do what you love. That's the outright thing. But the subtext is like, but like, not everybody can do what they love. You know, like, this is just fucking bullshit, to be honest. I'm sorry. But like, no. Listen, at the end of the day, we can't. If everybody wants to be the leader of the thing, nobody's going to be able to execute, you know, and nobody's going to be able to do X. And I genuinely, man, I really believe, you know, for me, I don't want to be necessarily the person who is a production designer, who's just like producing the thing, or who, you know, I don't want to be a janitor. I don't want to be cleaning the office. But let me be very real with you for a second and say, like I don't want to do that. And I don't think there are a ton of people that like necessarily want to do that stuff. But I genuinely believe in the art of that. And I believe that there can be a lot of fucking pride taken in that. And like, that is something that could drive me to tears over how passionate I am about like each of these little jobs. Because the reality is, nothing truly changes unless everybody is like pushing toward that same goal. And man, oh man, every little person has an effect there. And so, you know, I don't think so.
It's going to be natural for people
to trend
towards like specializing in one arc of this triangle. And that's great because we need that as a society. And it's great for them because they don't stress themselves like trying to cultivate skills or parts of their personality that they might not even care to exist.
Yeah. Sorry. I was trying to start a fight with the whole like follow your heart, do what you love
camp, which wasn't necessary,
but it is somewhat related.
It's definitely related. And you know, I have your back
in that fight. Thanks.
I'm in your corner, man.
Appreciate that.
But yeah, exactly. What you said was you don't expect everyone to need to, certainly, nor want to try to hit all 3 points of this triangle.
No.
But
in fact, I think it's bad for business.
Yes, absolutely.
You need a balance.
In all things. But you personally strive to hit all 3 points.
Well, yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, I want to innovate, I want to drive things forward, and I want to be a leader in that stuff. And I think that to be a leader, you need to understand the facets of the things you're trying to direct. Even if you're not executing on them, knowing what goes into that machine is really important, and having like a true empathy and respect for it. So yeah, I try and be balanced in that, even though at the end of the day, maybe, you know, long-term, I'm probably not as focused on my technical proficiency. I'm more focused on, you know, my problem solving and then my style, which is kind of maybe the next jump, Vince.
Yeah.
Let me jump there. May I?
Please take Thank this you. Leap. I will
so,
take it with
so,
you.
So here's a thing. You know, I'm a big Seth fan. I've, you know, read all his stuff. Obviously, yes. I did a project with him. I'm in his camp. And something he talked about a long time ago was the purple cow. It was that, and this was actually kind of gets back at our last episode, which was episode 11 with Jake Heinitz talking about the art of the zag. And I kind of pushed back on you about safety and risk. I said safety or safe is risky. And that standing out is actually more it's a safer play in a lot of ways. It's less risky because everybody's playing it safe. And that was kind of sort of born of the Seth Godin ethos of the purple cow. The purple cow is the only one that gets noticed, you know? There are a lot of cows out there. The purple one is the only one that gets noticed. So weird is good. And so this brings me to my point with the creative trifecta, which is, you know, listen, there are a lot of people who are getting a lot of technical skill. If you watch a documentary like Press Pause Play, great documentary, which I highly suggest.
I'm always in the market for a good documentary. So
Vince, please do, really, man. And actually, Seth makes an appearance in there along with Moby and all these different artists. It's beautiful. It's about the creative revolution, which is something awesome. I talk about a lot. You know, it's something we have talked about a lot. We don't have to beat it to death here, but maybe close. You know what I mean?
We'll save that beating for another show.
yeah. So within that is here's the way I see it, and this is, it's really weird to me to see things kind of play out the way they have because, you know, I think 3, 4, 5 years ago, I was talking about how, I was kind of a jack of all trades style of learning, of like developing my skills, whatever, kind of owning them, maybe even before I initially had them. And I said, you know what? I kind of put a stake in the ground. I said, you know what? I'm never going to be the best at any of these things. It's just not realistic. It's not realistic in terms of time, dedication, interest, money, whatever. Like, there are just too many variables that are just not going to equate for me. But dear Vince, I could be a combination that's never been seen before. I could be, you know, sort of one of a kind in my own way. I can be, you know, the best combination of skills.
Mm.
Because somebody who is 100% a piano grandmaster, you know, maybe they lack in a certain skill that I can bring, you know, and whatever, we're talking about different things there. But the point is, in a world of a lot of people and a lot of information and knowledge, there are naturally going to be a lot of people proficient, you know, in their different skill sets. And yes. To me, the key is to be proficient to a degree, but then be able to differentiate yourself in other ways. So for me, the more important thing kind of is my style because, listen, there are a million people who have deep technical design skills. But, you know, now let's say, okay, now let's talk about that million people, and it's different numbers, whatever, who also have a deep technical problem-solving ability. Now let's say that's a quarter of them, right? So now it's 250,000. Now let's say that of those 250,000, how many of them have a deep, like, embedded or like a deep, you know, ingrained sense of style and have this personal flair? Let's say that's maybe only 10,000. Now, let's think about other ways that we can differentiate ourselves. How many of those guys have projects that vary from, you know, let's say film to audio to whatever? Okay, now we're down to like 300. Now, let's say that those right. I know it goes on, but honestly, man, like, this is the way I'm thinking, and this is something that Seth kind of ingrained in me too, which is like, be the obvious choice. Be the one person for this particular thing. And it's an easy sell.
I agree with you. I'm gonna push back slightly.
Sure. I've got my feet dug in over here.
You've got your plan. Firstly, the idea of be the obvious choice, I think that's just really on point. Sure. And when you introduced me to the concept, I think it was a couple months ago, I was instantly on board. So I've got nothing but praise for that logic, and it's something I strive to do as well. But what I'm gonna maybe push back a bit on this point in the triangle style and its use as a differentiator, because the inherent weakness in this point on the triangle is that it is maybe the easiest with which to differentiate oneself, but it is also the point most subject to outside influences. It is a victim of other people's tastes. your taste can only be viewed through the lens of other people's tastes, right?
Yeah.
And so the old adage, everybody's got an opinion, kind of comes to mind. You say there are probably 10,000 people or 100,000 people with technical skill, but I would say the number of people who consider themselves to have taste, whether that's true on a greater level, kind of depends on your definition, but I think that number would be even larger.
Yeah, I mean, we're using example numbers, but yes. I mean, I guess, okay, to be fair, okay, you're right. To be fair, my ideology here is about being the obvious choice. Mm-hmm. And so by that the very nature of that idea, I'm not talking to that many people. You know, I'm talking to a lot of people who are hopeful to be that, but the reality is, like, that's not that many people. We're talking about, like, a minuscule amount of the population that can be that.
Right.
But I think there are lessons from the pursuit of the obvious choice that can be applied to people who are maybe working in tighter confines, you know? So, like, within that, how do you be the obvious choice of the production designer? You know what I mean? What are the ways you can differentiate yourself? And I honestly think a lot of this has to do with, like, it's almost like, let's just pretend that at the base level, everyone has 100 points, okay? Uh-huh. And let's say, these are all just example numbers, but let's say the production designer has 80 points in the technical skill level. They have 10 points in style and 10 points in solving, okay?
Sure.
That is the base level of every production designer. Now, to differentiate yourself, what you need to do is not just appropriate your points better, it's find ways to get more points. So get 10 more points and put them in style. Now you stand above all other production designers. You are the obvious choice in production designers. You're not like, you know, this like superstar, rock star, bullshit, whatever. You know, that stuff's bullshit to a degree. But you are the best, or you're just the clear choice of production designer. And so I think, to me, what this does is it's a good matrix to look at where are the places I should try and kind of hack out more points, you know, in a really weird like avatar video game like
yeah.
character
no,
style.
I think this I mean I think this makes total sense, but my only point is that if you are a person considering how do I stand out and you rely solely on just I'm going to cultivate an aesthetic and a taste, I don't think that alone is actually going to set you apart, because I think that's something all of us strive to do on some level.
Yeah, so but what I'm saying is like figure out what you're trying to be, what you're trying to be the best of or the choice of or just average of, you know what I mean? Because that's the first step is like, okay, how do I get at the professional level?
Right.
Honestly, that's like
how do I make
the
cut?
Yeah. How do I get on the team? Yeah. So what I'm saying is like try and figure out the general attributes there. You know, again, if we're going to think practically, when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in this world, in the creative world, a lot of what I did was, and I continue to do, is have coffee with people and ask them like what makes them up, you know, especially when I was like meeting with planners and strategists. It was like, so what do you read every day? You know, what books would you suggest? Why do you think you're qualified to be this person? Not in like a shitty, like, so do you really think? No, but just like figuring out like what are the things that make this person up or make up this person, and then breaking that down in like a few ways. So then like you can kind of start to get in your mind like, oh, these are the things that make up this like general branch of people. Let's just call them strategists. You know, like, okay. Again, I want to get practical because that's the point of this. If we're talking about advertising people, mm-hmm. there is a, you know, strategy and planning is sort of a bit of a messy little thing there. You know, you have a great book from Stephen King, not the horror writer, but Stephen King, on account planning, which was a thing that came out of London. And that is sort of like bled into strategy, which is sort of messy, especially with digital. But let's just say strategists in general. These are people who I could probably name a few sources. PSFK is something these guys are going to read. PSFK.com. You know, these are kind of people who come from a like an IDEO style of like cultural anthropology. They understand people. You know, they're reading PSFK. They're reading a digital buzz blog is one I really like. It's just about like cool little interactions on digital and in real life. And you start to get kind of like a set list of like the things these people are reading. You know, maybe 10 Faces of Innovation, Tom Kelly book on from IDEO. And you start to get like a base level of things that make up this person. And then what I'm saying is the opportunities are to remix that and to diverge from that while keeping most of the base level. You know what I'm saying? You know, having a unique backstory and a unique perspective is a lot of what this is about. And
yeah,
so
I think that makes sense.
Really what
I
I'm
think...
saying is understand what you want to do, understand the things that make that career or that person up, and then remix it in a really cool way, and that's how you're going to stand out.
Well, I think that's well said. I think I'm on the same page now. Now that we really locked horns or anything, but
I kind of wish we would have. I mean, I'm still.
I know. I think we were just approaching the same idea from two different sides of the fence.
Who won though?
I think I won for sure.
No, I think I definitely won.
No.
Vince, let me teach you something. In the podcasting world, whoever talks more wins.
Well, then you're the undisputed champion, my friend.
Wow, that's horrible. Oh, man. What a sad
realization. What a thing to say from me.
No. I mean, you held a mirror up. You didn't really even say anything.
But, dude, that's a great combo. We've got lots more to cover on that.
But...
But
it's the kind of conversation that reminds me of and Vince, listen, this is just a pro tip. You know, tell stories. People love stories.
Yeah.
Actually, this is totally – or this is like very closely unrelated. Seems paradoxical. It was closely unrelated to our off-topic topic. But I'm just going to tell you a memory I have, a couple of quick anecdotes. Not even anecdotes, more just like thoughts. You know, as you grow older, you start to think about your parents, and you think about how shitty you were.
As a child, yes.
And how hard that job is. It's crazy, Vince.
Thankless.
And, you know, last time I was at home, I was talking to my mom, and we'd stopped somewhere. We were getting something. I don't know what it was. Some department store. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm having some like flashbacks to you taking – me and my sister, Maddie, shopping. And I was like, wow, we were fuckers. Like, I was just remembering, like, just running around the store, like, just like playing hide and go seek, just being crazy. And I was like, wow, you are, you're a strong human being to have to deal with all that. And, then I'm also flashing back, unrelated, Vince, but just getting it off my chest. Was it Kohl's? I want to say it was Kohl's. They had an N64 in some of the sections. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah, they had like F-Zero, whatever racing game there.
Oh, what a classic game, my friend.
And Vince, let me tell you this. Where did this insight come from? Where did this, like, how did that happen? You know what it was? It was somebody who was deeply problem-solving, strategy, skill set, saying, hey, like observing how people shop and what they do and saying, hey, like a lot of moms come here with their kids. And one of the biggest detractors from that experience is the kids just like being annoying and wanting to leave.
Just being whiny little shits.
Yeah. So how about we distract them and let's create a pleasurable experience for everybody. And honestly, I loved playing that game. I played it for like 45 minutes and then my mom knew where I was and came and got me and we left. That's just an example of a smart insight. You know, the Swiffer.
Really, though.
That was a smart insight too. That's an interesting story. You should read that one. Okay. Maybe we can link to it somewhere. Basically, IDEO people.
Maybe in some notes about the show.
Show notes, yeah. I'm quick, just so we don't leave anybody hanging. IDEO people observing observing mostly moms at home. Not saying that the homemaking is only a mom thing, but they were mostly observing moms at home. And part of their cleaning ritual often included a wet paper towel after sweeping to just get up the last little bit of grime. And it was like, well, wait, why is that a step? You know, honestly, man,
right.
In a lot of weird ways, not weird, just a really honest way, most of innovation just comes from observing the steps it takes to accomplish a task and simplifying it or improving it.
And eliminating. Straight up.
Yeah, yep. Eliminating. So, okay. The reason for those two little asides, Thank you for letting me share that. It's very cathartic, and I feel like
I'm
working on a lot of issues.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I was talking about favorite store, your favorite place to shop, or you know, that could, you can take it a lot of ways. I don't want to lead you too far. Could just be experience.
I think you led me just far enough. And can I just say, one of history's and this podcast's personal greatest segues. We joke about segues a lot on this show, mostly because our segues are god awful trash.
Yeah.
But that was a factoid about problem solving that also involved a retail merchandiser. So I just got to say, bravo.
If a podcast could high five itself, it just did.
That's a pretty delicate way to put what we just did. But
what?
In terms of my favorite store, I've got one. It's going to sound, I hope it doesn't sound altruistic or anything, but my favorite single chain to shop at is Goodwill.
Wow.
And not necessarily because it provides a good service and a charitable service, which is nice. It's always nice to know that the money you spend is at least in part doing good.
Yeah.
But moreover, because it's basically that garage sale feel, which I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm an avid garage sailor.
I love that.
I love a garage sale. And basically, it's a store that I can go to, and the inventory is not consistent. And the deals are phenomenal. And the vibes are cool. And I can just go there every weekend, see some new stuff, and shop for whatever I don't need at the moment.
That's interesting, man. It's sort of like a art gallery meets shopping experience in some weird ways.
Yeah, and also kind of an anthropological.
Yeah.
It's a great cross-section of people at Goodwill.
I think people should strive to be more anthropological if they can. Honestly, like that, you know, we're talking about technical skill, we're talking about whatever. A lot of this comes down to that, though, which is understanding others, which, hey, Vince, I'm going to cue you in here. A little pro tip. It starts with understanding self.
Or does understanding self come from first understanding others? Because that's easier.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Regardless, I think there are parallel paths, you know, that feed each other.
Well, yeah, for sure. I was just trying to be dramatic.
I was picturing a convenience store. You know, you walk in, you walk to those fridges. Is mm-hmm. that the plural of refrigerators? In the short term, or in the short,
it's fridges.
It just sounds like frigid.
It's like bridges,
it just
though.
Ugh. Refrigerators. You walk to those refrigerators, and it's like you have the 25 Pepsis lined up in that little container, and you pull one out, and they just slide to the front. And I think Goodwill is the antithesis of that.
Yes, man, they sure are.
you slide out those old Converse sneakers and. And a waffle maker slides in its place.
Yeah, man. You know what I found there the other weekend? A pair of sunglasses that I promptly lost. But more interestingly, I found these little coasters. And they come in this little cabinet. And they each have their own little handle.
Oh, my gosh. Vince, that's the perfect housewarming gift. Thank you.
No,
wow.
I mean,
I can't
believe
that. Because, like,
they're great.
You're so kind.
Anyway, yeah. Great store. Always have a great time there. What about you, man?
So part of the reason I was feeling this off-topic topic was, you know, I just moved into the new studio, which is also a home live studio, which is pretty crazy. It's sort of a radical move, one for which I'm so happy with so far. Like, wow.
Yes.
You know, my work and my life are so intertwined.
Inexorably linked.
Yeah, but not in the, you know, especially, you know, I think the last 6 months, not in an unhealthy way, not in like an obsessive way, you know, but
I would agree.
But yeah, so I was just thinking about, like, you know, things I want for the studio and for here and whatever. And I don't really know. Like, I was like, oh yeah, some sort of cool, like, Blue Dot, like, furniture place, whatever. But I mean, thrift stores, you said Goodwill, but thrift stores in general are so cool. And, you know, I'm kind of over this phase, but it's still one of my favorite stores is IKEA.
I also love that story.
Yeah, I have these giant bookshelves here, which I kind of you do this thing. So you do this thing when you don't like something, especially when there are people around whose taste you respect. You kind of just make an offhand comment about it, like, "Yeah, I hate those things," and you're like, just like perked up like a gazelle, just like waiting for their response. And I've made those comments or that comment about the square bookshelf things from IKEA, right? They're ubiquitous. They are like a part of culture, and that's what just annoys me. Not in a hipster, like too mainstream, but it's just like, okay, let me phrase it this way. And maybe we're getting too deep, but fuck it. We're James Cameron. We go all the
way. We're in there.
James Cameron goes all the way. Two. I have these giant bookshelves from IKEA, the black ones. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, they were a pain in the ass to move.
Yeah, so note to the listeners, Vince helped move me. He was one of a pretty solid crew, I would say.
A legion.
Yeah, a legion. A kind, kind group of friends to which I'm actually like uncomfortably indebted. That helped me move in the midst of my injury. So I was on crutches while like 5 to 10 friends moved all of my stuff. but I have these bookshelves, which, you know, they were great in the studio, my last studio. And they're fine here. I just set them up, Vince, actually. Just moved a bunch of stuff around. And I put all my books on there. I have so many books, Vince. It's crazy. But
a lot of
it's
books,
just like,
man.
To me, let me just say this. I'm somebody who's obsessed with stories, storytelling. You know, a lot of times I talk about my long term is like writing, directing for film and for screen. Although I think it's not quite that because the ecosystem is changing so much, you know. And that's actually part of this conversation. But I think that these IKEA things take you out of the story. Okay, so good product placement in a story or in a commercial or in a film, it adds to the story. It makes you feel like it's more natural. To me,
sure.
IKEA shelves are so like obvious and such a thing that like I just notice them, and maybe it's just me, you know, because I am so aware of them. But it takes me out of the story. And
okay.
I honestly love an environment that just feels like I don't really know where any of this is from. It just feels like this fictional or I mean it's a real thing, but it just feels like this environment that is created or that has been curated. And I like that. I like when I don't really know because it allows me to focus on the place and the aesthetic and not on like, oh yeah, they probably got an aisle 19. They had to get three parts. They
yes.
Oh, they went
to realize an artifact from the real world. The fantasy is broken.
Yeah. Like a Coke on the table. Yeah. Okay. That's part of it. But like an IKEA thing, I'm like, I saw that in aisle 9 and then we had to go get it. It took me like 3.5 hours to put that fucking thing together. I can't believe
right,
it.
Right.
But good price, you know, IKEA, Swedish, and the furniture.
Well, so this has gone tangential. I like it. But why? What is it about IKEA that you love then?
I love that it's such a part of culture. I love that it is. It's become
sure.
The place to shop for, you know, we are of a burgeoning... you know, young 20s, mid 20s generation that is like trying to deal with being an adult. And part of being an adult means furnishing your home or your rented apartment or rented condo. And that's just the first place these people go. And beyond that, okay, so like the furniture is so like mid-century modern, iconic, obvious, also kind of cheap. And so it's like becomes ubiquitous. But the store is such an experience because there are not that many employees. It's like they're weird on purpose, which I love. You have to pick out your own shit. It's just this weird fucking thing, man. And so like going
things
there,
all have names.
Yeah, going
you
there is a
meatballs
thing.
Meatballs there. It's just bizarre.
It's a thing. Yeah, there's a cafeteria. It is an experience. So to me, whether that's good or ill, the fact that it's an experience is like enough for me to like it.
Bingo. I'm on the same page. I just went there a little while ago to get a desk chair.
Oh, nice. What kind did you get?
It was the Schlurbin. No, it's a nice one.
Oh, the Schlurbin Schlurbin?
Yeah, for sure. It's
love
got the, we got the cushions on the seats there. We got the swivel. When I put it together, I think I screwed it in just a little bit lopsided, though, because if I put my weight on just one portion, I start rolling away. Really added something to the conversation, didn't it, Grant? But I totally agree. It's a store that tells a story. And that's awesome.
That's all I can ask of a store.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, hey, listen, trade that E for a Y. That's all I ask of you.
I ask one thing. Swap vowels.
So speaking of stories, Vince.
Do you want to get some last thoughts rolling on this?
I do.
Creative trifecta.
Here's the thing, Vinny. You like that?
Yeah, Grant.
A bit of a tone there. Because you still have not revealed to me where you see yourself in this matrix, in this creative trifecta. Where are you at?
Oh, hey. I didn't realize.
I like these stories, Vince.
Well, I mean, it's going to sound cliche to say I pride myself on striving to hit parts of all three, but if I were to evaluate honestly the points on the triangle that I have a passion for, I would say I definitely lean toward a combination of technical skill and taste more than the problem-solving point. I mean, I think it's part of being good at my job and a good writer and a good professional to be able to think about problems critically and solve them. And if I didn't think I could do that, I don't think I would be a good asset to myself or my company. But where I have a passion for is the synthesis, creating and cultivating my work. And if that comes at the expense of strategy sometimes, which it often does in my personal writing, then so be it. And I don't really mind. So I think if I were to map myself, it would be like a 50-45 or something. In terms of the triangle. But I think without like going too far into the actual specifics, that's where I would place myself.
Yeah. I think you're probably more in the problem solving camp than you give yourself credit for, even though you don't want to give yourself credit for that because you don't want to. But I think so. But the thing is, like, well, maybe not, I guess. It's interesting to think about how connected those points are. It's really hard to like find a clear line between them.
There aren't really clear definitions. But, they're messy. But what this is more lenses which to view oneself and others.
And I really respect that. And I think part of this whole process, you know, for someone like me who is like can't let it go and tries to own all of them, that's a thing, okay? But for a more rational human being, I think a really good move is to own your specific set.
And, absolutely.
And not only that, but to complement the particular sets of your coworkers or your partners or whatever. And so within that, Vince, what I hear is you saying, oh, you know what? We have a strategist on this project who's really owning the problem solving here. Okay, so they're going to input that. And what's going to happen is they're going to come in with about a 90% problem-solving approach here. I'm going to come in with, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever in my style. And, like, when we add those up, we're going to get a pretty kick-ass product.
We got a big number. And that's what I'm going to bring to the table on this particular project.
Yeah, being comfortable with
that. It's going to be those projects where you're going solo, though, and you've got to use whatever points you have in that triangle and make it work. And that's cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something to just kind of accept from my perspective, which is it's not for everybody, you know,
right. Really.
I mean, my perspective and I think some of the things can be applied to a lot of different situations. But the reality is I'm talking to a very specific type of person who's going to apply this directly or specifically, you know, in the exact formula. Because, listen, that is my ultimate thesis within this trifecta is that if you want to own your future, really own it, what that requires is living in the sweet spot. It means that instead of having 100 points in your arsenal, you need to find a way to maximize and earn 300. I know that sounds fucking crazy, but no, honestly, Vince, that's how I feel. I feel like I'm trying in a lot of ways to have 300 points. The reality is I'm going to allocate and reallocate depending on project and depending on things. But in the long run, in the short run of things, what is required is to be able to access 100 of each of those if you want to stay solo and independent. Because let's say, Vince, in your context, you're gonna lead with style, you're gonna have some technical skill, but you're not really coming up with much problem-solving ability. Not to your detriment or not in a negative way, but just in a reality. You know, this is the way you're approaching it. If you don't have a strategist, what the fuck's gonna happen?
You know what's gonna happen?
You're gonna have a fucking flop. You're gonna have a flop of a solution because it's just gonna be a stylistic painting without any sort of backbone.
Totally.
So if you want to be somebody who's gonna be able to approach it with some backbone, not with some backbone, you know what I'm saying. But if you want to come up with all the stuff, if you want to own that, if you want it to whatever, you're gonna need points in all of those categories. Or, and this is really just sort of like adopting the other models, you're gonna need to have people you can rely on to fill in those gaps.
Right. Every person doesn't need to hit every point of the triangle, but every project to be successful does.
It does. It really does. I mean,
no exceptions.
There are projects that, you know, maybe, you know, honestly require 80% execution, technical skill, and really not a lot of style and not a lot of solving. But they're going to need elements of it. I mean, it's just, it's part of it.
Yep.
And so it's understanding the balance. And I think if to apply our lens, Vinny, which is beyond how can someone support you, right? But you know, what are the last thoughts you can take away here, or the point? To me, it starts with self-awareness. So figuring out what's your skill set, what do you have right now, you know, where do you want to be? For me, I knew I wanted to be in a position to control more of the elements and control more of the final outcome. And so that requires developing skill sets, I think, at least in my approach, in a lot of the categories, at least to understand them and communicate the solutions better, whatever. So that's one part, understanding self. The other part is understanding the needs of either the organization or of the job, whatever. And a lot of that can be found by just, you know, identifying self-interest and then identifying the person who's doing the thing you want to do and picking their brain. You know, figuring out what makes them up. So identify yourself, identify the needs of the thing that you want to do, and then just be realistic about what you need to maybe ramp up on, ramp down on, build in. Okay, so that's base level. Those are for people who want to hit 100. And now for people who want to, like, fucking go, like, go, you know, who – I mean, really, you know, the people who really want to overachieve here, it's figuring out ways to – amplify your time, energy, and skills to reach a higher level than 100. Because realistically, Vince, I think it's possible. It's very possible. Because I think 100 is below our full potential. And that's so okay. That is so, so okay. But right. there are people who want more than that. And that is okay too. You know what I mean? On both sides, there is no judgment. It's just a reality of desires. And so... things like maximizing your time, being smart about investing your time, finding mentors or people who can progress you further, putting in the time on developing your skill sets, and being aware of culture, reading, you know, spending time to write, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if anybody wants more of that, like, please talk to me, because there are a lot of strategies to accomplish that.
I mean, that's what we talk about on the show, right? The ways to accomplish that.
Putting your time, man. Craft creativity and putting your time.
Bingo, bango. As a dovetail to your last thoughts, which I thought were on point as always.
Jeez, Vince.
For real. Understanding not only the skills that you have, where those points are, and what you want those points to become, which I think is what you touched on mainly. I also think it's valuable to understand why those points exist where they exist. For me, for instance, I consider myself capable of strategic thinking, otherwise I wouldn't be very good at my job. But the reason why I think, to use the conversation that we've built here today, the reason that I think I have points in style and execution is because that's what I'm passionate about more than anything. And I excel at those areas because I like to do those areas. And it sounds really simple when you put it like that, but I think a lot of people who are starting this journey of discovering, and by the way, we're not done with the journey, we're still on it. But people who are starting this journey of discovering like where exactly they fit in this creative trifecta, it's going to be valuable to them to learn why they might not want to pull in all directions at once and why they do have the skills that they have.
Very on point, Vince. I mean, that's the kind of other side of things that I try to acknowledge, but I sometimes have trouble with. You know, but I mean, that's what I'm saying when I say, oh, my message right here is not for everybody.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just like, and it's not a negative thing, which is, I try and harp on it so much because I feel like I'm like projecting some sort of negativity, but just understanding what you like and just being real about the amount of energy you want to put in and the things you want to do. You know, like you can fake it to a degree, but if you really don't like executing, stop trying to execute so much, you know?
Exactly.
It's not going to fucking work out.
It's just going to be, it's going to be stress on you and time wasted.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, kind of fuck you. Like, be real with your, I mean, I'm just saying like,
right,
I've dealt with people who have tried to fake that and then don't deliver. And it's like, hey, I don't even care. Just don't tell me you're going to do this thing. Don't tell me you want to do this thing. Should we bleep that? We'll bleep that out, right?
No, we're leaving it in. It's just a good, it's a great punctuation mark on the conversation, man. And man, can I say, very enlightening for me today.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that. Likewise.
Yeah, it's cool to talk about this stuff with you, especially when it's something in the pipeline that I'm going to get to read in a more fleshed out way.
Ooh, it's in the P line.
It's in that P line. And
sounds dirty.
That would
sounds
just old. Drop this show an entire class.
In record news, the unsubscribe rate is hit.
Through the roof. Sell, sell, sell.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've covered everything we wanted to cover.
Should we cut that last part out? Oh, God, we're getting some meta.
There's not going to be any show.
Listen, Vince, don't talk about cutting anything out, okay? We'll cut the last part right there where I was talking about, like, don't cut anything out, but...
Why don't we just cut everything that isn't talking about cutting parts of the show out?
Well, we'll have, like, 12 minutes left. Whatever, man. Hey, man.
Great combo, as always.
Yeah, y'all take care. I think
this was a great hour spent, and I can't wait to do it again.
Let's do it again right now.
Back-to-back shows?
No. That's cocky.
Do you think we can ship it?
Yeah, I think probably ship it.
Shipped.